Nina and pointed up towards the incredible colored glass dome high above their heads. It flooded the entire staircase with light containing all the colors of the rainbow.
"Wow,"
she mouthed silently, almost falling up the stairs because she was unable to take her eyes off the beautiful glass dome. When they reached the first landing, they were led down a long corridor to the room on the right. Mr. Daffer knocked on the door softly before opening the door slightly and peering inside. He then opened the door fully and gestured for them to enter. Lucien was shocked when he saw Lucy in the bed. She looked so pale as she slept. He noticed a woman standing next to her, administering a cool, damp towel to her forehead. By the look of her clothes, Lucien guessed she must be a servant of some kind, and it alarmed him that someone else would be in the room when he performed his magic.
"How is she, Lillian?"
Mr. Daffer asked in a quiet voice.
"She hasn't regained consciousness since yesterday, sir. I'm afraid she may not last the night. Should I send for the healers again?"
"No. No, thank you, Lillian. Please, can you excuse us for a while? I will tend to Lucy for now."
"As you wish, sir,"
Lillian said, bowing slightly. She crossed the room, opened the door, and exited onto the landing before quietly closing the door behind her. Mr. Daffer waited a few seconds before speaking to Lucem.
"I thought it would be better if we were alone when you did your magic."
"Yes, thank you.
I appreciate that,"
Lucem replied, very relieved he no longer had to worry about another person keeping his secret safe. He walked over to the side of the bed and sat down on the chair next to Lucy. He could not believe how nervous he was. It was as if the whole weight of the world was pressing down on him, and he had no idea if he could even help Lucy or not. Nila could see the doubt and hesitation in Lucem's face as he sat there in front of Lucy. She walked over to him and held his hand. She looked into his eyes and said,
"I believe in you, Lucem. I know you can do this. You'll do just fine."
She smiled at him, then gave his hand a final squeeze before stepping back and allowing him to do whatever he needed to do. Lucien bobbed his head towards her, then turned to face Lucy. He searched his newly found knowledge for a way to begin, but soon realized it was obvious he must first find out what was actually wrong with Lucy. Focusing hard, he sent out his mage sight to search inside Lucy's body for the cause of her illness. It took only a few minutes to find the problem. Lucy had some kind of growth in her body. It appeared to be eating away at the surrounding body tissue and was also stopping her vital organs functioning properly. He also noticed the growth was slowly poisoning her blood. He knew he couldn't just break up the object, as that would surely kill her from the poisoning of her blood. It needed to be removed, but it was so deep inside her he had no idea how to do it. Lucem retracted his mage sight from within Lucy's body and sat back heavily in the chair.
"What's up? What did you find? Can you heal her?"
asked Mr. Daffer desperately.
"I found something inside her, and it needs to be removed, but I'm unsure how to do it without killing her."
"There must be something you can do. Please, please try."
Mr. Daffer moved to the other side of the bed and took hold of Lucy's other hand, while tears flowed freely down his cheeks and dripped onto the pristine white sheets. Lucem racked his brain for a solution, but all he could come up with was a crazy idea that he doubted would work due to its complexity. The only thing he could think of doing was to create an opening in Lucy's skin and remove the growth that way. The problem was, the growth would have to be pulverized into minute pieces, so it was able to pass through the small blood vessels and roots necessary to reach the outside world. He couldn't allow the poison to enter her bloodstream, or it would kill her for sure. He would again have to use his force field magic, but this time on a minuscule level. He needed to contain the broken-up growth and then maneuver it to an incision made in Lucy's skin, all the time keeping track of thousands, if not tens of thousands, of tiny fragments. If a single fragment was left inside her, he felt sure it could grow again and claim her life in the future. Thinking back to the days spent on the side of the river collecting gold, he knew his limitations and the number of objects he could track and manipulate at any given time. And he also knew this would be many times that number. Lucem explained in detail what he had seen to the others, and then told them of his plan to remove it and why it was not possible due to the incredible number of particles that would need to be dealt with and manipulated simultaneously. Mr. Daffer sat there holding his wife's hand and cried in silence.
"There must be a way to do it. There has to be,"
Neela said out loud to herself. She sat there for several minutes, thinking, in a room so quiet she could hear her own heartbeat.
"Is it possible to remove a small part at a time?"
she asked Lusam hopefully.
"Then you wouldn't have to deal with as many parts all at once."
Lusam took a loud intake of breath. It almost sounded as if he had been holding his breath since finishing his explanation.
"I suppose it's possible, but I think it would take an awful long time to achieve."
Thinking about the problem in more detail, he realized he could contain the growth in a force field, then take a small portion at a time into a second force field to remove it from her body. He would also have to maintain a third force field at the skin's surface to stop her bleeding to death while the procedure took place. He felt dizzy at the complexity of it all, and he also had no idea how long it would take to do. Could he even maintain his magic that long, non-stop? He didn't know. If his magic failed, the poison would enter Lucy's bloodstream and kill her for sure. He took a long, steadying breath, then began to explain the concept of what he would have to do if he attempted the procedure. When he finished speaking, he was met with a wall of silence. It was obvious that both Mr. Daffer and Neela understood the enormity of such an undertaking and the potential risks involved to Lucy. Mr. Daffer stood up from his chair, bent over, and kissed Lucy tenderly on her forehead.
"I love you, Lucy,"
he whispered in her ear. Then he walked slowly around the foot of the bed and came to stand before Lusam. He placed a hand on Lusam's shoulder, took a deep, steadying breath, and spoke what must have been the hardest words of his life.
"Although I could never fully understand what you must try to do and save Lucy, I do understand how incredibly difficult it must be for you. But even knowing that Lucy may die should it not work, I would still ask that you at least try to save her. Please know that I will not place blame upon you, Lusam, should your efforts be in vain, and neither should you blame yourself if such comes to pass."
Lusam could feel Mr. Daffer's hand tremble on his shoulder. He sensed the incredible self-control of the man, being able to stand there and request that he still try to save Lucy, even knowing if he should fail, the love of his life would surely die. Lusam placed his hand on top of Mr. Daffer's, and looking him directly in the eyes, he replied,
"I will give it all I have. I promise. You've both given us so much, and now it's time we tried to repay you for your kindness."
Lusam's words were too much for Mr. Daffer. He squeezed Lusam's shoulder one more time, then turned his head away as a flurry of tears rolled down his face. Neela stepped forward to steady him and helped him back to his chair next to his unconscious wife. Lusam looked over at Neela, and she nodded at his unspoken question of whether he should begin. With a deep breath and a prayer to Aisha to grant him the strength to complete his task, he closed his eyes and sent forth his mage sight to once again locate the growth within Lucy's body. Finding the growth, he surrounded it with a force field and carefully detached it from its blood supply and surrounding tissue. Carefully, he repaired the area and then made sure there was no further internal bleeding before beginning the long process of removing the mass. Taking a small piece of the growth and separating it off from the main mass into a second force field, he began to maneuver the tiny object through Lucy's vascular system and towards the surface of her skin. He had no idea there were so many blood vessels inside a human body. It was like the largest and most complex maze he could ever have imagined. Finally, he found a route to the surface of Lucy's skin towards her lower abdomen. Parting her skin with his magic and placing yet another force field over the cut to stop the bleeding, he let the small piece of growth pass through the opening and removed it from Lucy's body. Not able to break his concentration and look for himself, he just hoped that Neela was there to clean away the parts of the growth he was removing from Lucy's body as they emerged. Countless hours went by, and still Lusam had not removed all of the growth. Neela had no idea how he was able to maintain his concentration for so long without even moving. If it wasn't for the small, glistening specks of material appearing every few minutes on the surface of Lucy's skin, and the beads of sweat on Lusam's forehead, which seemed to be becoming more noticeable by the minute, she would have assumed Lusam had fallen asleep, sitting upright in his chair. Lusam was almost completely exhausted. He could sense his magic reserves were almost depleted. All he could think about was a lesson he had been taught by his grandmother so long ago about the overuse of magic. She had told him,
"Never attempt to use too much magic at once, for if the magic reserve of any mage becomes empty, it would surely kill them."
He knew that point wasn't far off, and would certainly come before he had finished his task. His head pounded with the effort, and his heart raced at the thought of the consequences of failure. Lucy would surely die. Mr. Daffer would be devastated at the loss of his wife. But most of all, he feared letting Neela down by not being able to keep his promise of a life together. Without Lusam's magic, Neela would be once again forced to live on the streets. No, he could not let that happen. He would not let that happen. Desperately, he searched for an answer. All he needed was a little more magic. His task was almost complete, but he was almost out of time. Lusam knew the magic within him would be replaced over time, like a leaking roof would eventually fill a bowl left to catch the rain. Every body and everything had magic within it and surrounding it. This was a lesson he had learned many years ago, but until this moment it had not really meant that much to him. He needed to get some of that magic, and fast, before his own was completely used up and both he and Lucy died in the process. "That's it. Lucy," he thought to himself. Lucy was not a magic user, he knew that from her aura, but she would have a certain amount of magic within her, like all living beings. He just hoped it would be enough to complete his task. The trick would be not to take it all and end up killing her that way instead. He had absolutely no idea how he could use Lucy's store of magic, or even if it was possible to do so. Running out of time, he once again prayed for guidance before attempting to siphon off some of Lucy's magic into his own store. There seemed to be some kind of natural barrier containing the magic within Lucy, and it took him several minutes to find a way to penetrate the barrier. Once he eventually found a way to get through her barrier, he found it very easy to take her magic into his own reserve. It felt like a cool drink of water quenching his thirst after a long desert crossing. It was only a small amount of magic compared to what he was able to hold, but maybe it would be enough. Working as fast as he dared, he guided the last of the growth to the surface of Lucy's skin, before checking one final time it had all been removed. He removed the force field inside Lucy's body that had held the growth, and then repaired the cut to her skin. With only seconds to spare, he opened his eyes and allowed himself a small smile. The room spun in front of his eyes, and his vision faded to black as he felt himself falling. The last thing he heard was Neela calling his name before the darkness claimed him.
Chapter 9. Wren watched the agent of Aemon from the shadows, as he had done now for so long. He had been tempted many times to end the life of this necromancer, none more so than when he had raised the dead body in that back alley with his dark magic and sent it out into the city to do his evil bidding. The death and destruction it would have caused if Wren had not been there to deal with it made him even more inclined to end the life of this evil man. Taking a deep breath, he steadied his overwhelming desire to kill him and reminded himself of why he was here, why he had spent over a year following this man in the shadows, sleeping rough on the streets and in alleyways, waiting and hoping that one day he would lead him to the boy mage known as Lusam, who held so much promise for the land of Afaron. Today, as he watched the agent of Aemon, he noticed some strange behavior he hadn't seen before. He seemed to be walking several paces, then stopping, closing his eyes, using some sort of magic spell, then walking again. He repeated this process for several hours, seemingly not concerned at all if anyone saw him or not. Each time he stopped, Wren could see his aura flash brighter with the use of magic. He seemed to be listening to something in the distance. And each time he stopped and closed his eyes, his head would flick slightly from side to side, as if he were trying to catch a distant voice on the breeze. All morning, and into the early afternoon, the agent of Aemon had been slowly making his way towards the east district of the city. Many people passing by had given him strange looks, and a few of the less savory types had even thrown verbal abuse at him, but he never once seemed to notice any of them. Ren was sure he could have come out of the shadows in plain sight and followed two footsteps behind him and still not have been seen. It was obvious he had sensed something that Ren could not. Ren could sense magic in others, but he was no mage. He was a paladin of Aisha, and he gained his power through his devotion to his god. Paladins often wielded weapons of power, and sometimes shields. Both contained blessings from their god, and the strength of those weapons were directly linked to the strength of their faith. Ren wielded both sword and shield. His devotion and faith were unquestionable. It was late afternoon when the agent of Aemon suddenly stopped his strange behavior. He was standing in the middle of the market square with his eyes closed, when to anyone that happened to be looking at him, he seemed simply to wake up from a deep sleep. His eyes snapped open, and he looked about at his surroundings as if he had no idea where he was. He looked up at the sun, as if to judge the time of day, then took another quick look around him, before heading straight for an inn on the opposite side of the market square. Ren guessed whatever he was listening to had stopped, but couldn't be sure. As luck would have it, another inn shared the market square directly opposite the first. Normally, Ren would have to sleep outside whichever inn the agent of Aemon chose to stay at, but today, luck was on his side, and he could find warmth, comfort, and a meal inside the inn opposite while he watched and waited for his quarry to reappear. Ren entered the inn via the main entrance facing the market square, his eyes quickly adjusting to the dimly lit interior. The room was larger than he would have guessed from outside. It held maybe a dozen large round tables with stools and benches, which provided seating for the many patrons who currently occupied them. A large fire was set in the hearth at the far end of the room, giving off a pleasant smell of pine from the burning wood. Ren instinctively scanned the room for potential threats, but found none. Most looked like they were traders conducting friendly business over a lunchtime ale or two. The low-down rumble of quiet conversation quickly fell silent, as one after another the patrons noticed the strange man now standing in the room. Ren knew how threatening he must look, standing there in his filthy clothes, with a large shield strapped to his back and a sword at his waist. He nodded a greeting to the man sitting at the closest table, attempting to lessen the now palpable tension filling the air. If he'd not been on his secret mission to follow the agent of Aemon, he would have worn his sigil of Aisha in plain view around his neck. The sigil was instantly recognizable by anyone in the land of Apharon, and would have clearly marked him as a paladin of Aisha. Paladins were held in extremely high regard throughout the land, as defenders of Apharon and its people. He had no doubt his reception here would have been completely different if he had been wearing his sigil in plain sight. However, he could not risk it becoming common knowledge around Helvil that a paladin of Aisha was within its walls. If the agent of Aemon heard rumors that a paladin might be here in Helvil, all may be lost, and the last year spent following him would have been for nothing. Ren slowly approached the counter. The barkeep had already stopped what he was doing, watching nervously as Ren approached. The barkeep cleared his throat and took a step back, placing a freshly dried flagon on the shelf at the back of the bar. Ren knew he was only trying to put himself out of the reach of his sword, just in case he was as dangerous as he looked. "Can I help you?" the barkeep asked, in a calm, even tone. Ren was impressed at his ability to hold his nerve, but felt guilty at causing him discomfort.
"I'd like a room, please. South-facing, with a window and a bathtub. A hot meal in my room, and most importantly, some privacy." "I'm sorry, we're fully booked at the moment, sir. Maybe the Royal Inn across the street can accommodate you," the barkeep said nervously.
Ren stared at the man. With each heartbeat, the barkeep withered under his gaze. Without breaking eye contact, Ren removed his coin pouch, produced a gold coin, and placed it on the counter in front of him. The barkeep momentarily let his eyes flick to the coin, and Ren could see them instantly light up at the sight of gold. Ren added a second gold coin to the first, then slowly pushed the two gold coins forward on the counter.
"I'm sure you can find a room for me here at your inn. It looks a much better establishment than the Royal Inn across the square," Ren replied, smiling at the barkeep's new predicament. Did he let this potentially dangerous man stay here and take the two gold coins, or still refuse him and throw away a week's worth of money to his competitor across the street?
Wren knew all about human nature, and so knew the answer even before the barkeep spoke a word.
"Actually, I think we do have a south-facing room available tonight, sir, now I think about it," he said, licking his lips subconsciously, eyes darting between Wren and the coins laid out between them.
Wren smiled at the man, pushing the coins to the rear of the counter, then taking a step back to give the man some room.
"Excellent. Thank you," replied Wren.
For a large man, he moved fast to scoop up the gold coins from the counter, then went to the key hook at the rear of the bar area, always staying out of range of any danger. He lifted a room key from one of the many hooks, then offered it at arm's length to Wren across the bar.
"Room 7, on the second floor. I will have the bathtub and food brought to your room shortly. Will that be all, sir?" he asked. "Yes. Thank you for your hospitality," Wren replied, still smiling at the man standing as far away from him as was possible.
He took the key and headed for the stairs to his room. He could feel every eye in the room follow him as he started to climb the staircase. As he turned the corner, out of sight, he paused and heard the conversations restart again, as if he'd never been there. He chuckled to himself. Wren knew that given a choice of speculating as to why a heavily armed man had just entered the establishment, or talking about business opportunities and making money, that they would choose the latter, and he would be very soon forgotten. He stopped outside the door marked number 7. It was a heavy, dark wooden door with a good quality lock and heavy hinges.
"People who stayed here obviously viewed security as a priority," Wren thought.
He guessed many traders would frequent these rooms on their way to and from their business dealings, and if they were carrying large sums of coins, they would certainly want well-made doors and locks. Wren unlocked the door and entered the room. He quickly walked over to the large window and was relieved to see it offered a fantastic view of not only the inn opposite, but the whole of the market square below. The room offered only basic comforts, but it was clean and well-maintained. There was a single wardrobe, 2 wooden dining chairs, and a small table. The bed was a large 4-poster bed with a small cabinet at each side, and an oil lamp filled on each. He looked at the large, comfortable-looking bed with regret, knowing he would be spending the night in a chair by the window, keeping watch, instead of sampling its warmth and comfort. Wren offered a prayer to Aisha for providing him with his new creature comforts, and the first opportunity in a long time to take a warm bath. He picked up one of the chairs and moved it to the window, then did the same with the small square-top table. He then removed his shield and placed it at the bottom of the bed, and was halfway through unbuckling his sword when a knock came at the door.
"Enter,"
Wren said, loud enough for them to hear at the other side of the door. In walked a young boy of about 12 years old, carrying a tray of food and drink. He noticed Wren's hand near his sword and froze to the spot with a look of sheer terror on his face. Wren saw the boy's reaction and nodded his head towards the table.
"Please put it on the table over by the window," Wren said, removing his sword belt and tossing it onto the bed.
The boy's eyes followed the sword until it hit the bed, and after several seconds staring at it, he seemed to remember Wren had just spoken to him.
"Oh, yes, sir. Sorry, of course,"
he stammered, while walking to the table near the window and depositing his tray of food.
"Would there be anything else, sir?"
he asked, backing towards the window as if he had been trapped in a room with a rabid wolf. Wren couldn't help but laugh at the boy's nervousness. He removed a silver coin from his pouch and tossed it through the air towards the boy. The boy caught it deftly in midair, and his nervousness was instantly replaced with a look of complete joy at receiving a silver coin.
"Nothing else for right now, thanks. I'd like my bathtub and water in about an hour, if you'd be kind enough to inform the barkeep on your way back."
"Sure thing, sir. Enjoy your food,"
he replied, looking a lot happier than when he first arrived. Wren watched the boy leave and closed the door gently behind himself before returning to the window seat to enjoy his food. It was the first hot meal he'd had for many a month, and the smell alone almost made him dizzy. Secretly, he hoped the agent of Aemon would stay at the inn opposite for at least a few days, but the way he had seen him act today, he doubted that would be the case. Something had obviously got his attention, and Wren couldn't see him wanting to lose the scent of whatever he'd been following for most of that day. Only time would tell. Wren let out a small sigh and lost himself in the simple pleasure of his hot food. It seemed like only a few minutes since he had finished his food before another knock brought his attention back to the door again.
"Enter,"
he said loudly. The door opened, and the same boy brought in a tin bathtub and placed it down in front of the fire. He was followed by three younger boys, all carrying buckets of steaming hot water. The younger boys entered the room, all three of them immediately looking towards the bed where Ren's sword still lay. The older boy had probably been telling tales to the younger ones, and now they had all seen his fabled sword, it must mean the rest of his story was also true, whatever that story was. The three younger boys stood staring open-mouthed at Ren's shield and sword lying on the bed until the older boy clattered the tin bathtub onto the floor in front of the fireplace, instantly bringing all three of them back to reality with a start. All three visibly jumped at the sudden sound, one even spilling part of the contents of his bucket down himself. Each boy quickly emptied their hot water into the bathtub, then turned to leave the room, none of them daring to look back towards Ren as they left. The older boy stepped back away from the bathtub towards the door behind him, before asking,
"Is there anything else you require, sir?"
"No, that will be all, thank you. Oh, you can tell me one thing, though."
Looking a little worried, the boy replied,
"What's that, sir?"
Smiling at the boy, Ren asked,
"Was it a good story you told your small friends?"
The boy couldn't help himself as a huge grin spread across his face.
"Aye, that it was, sir,"
he replied, as he backed out of the room, struggling to contain his own amusement. When the door closed, Ren couldn't help chuckling to himself either, as he imagined the outrageous stories that must now be spreading like wildfire among the younger employees of the inn. Removing a small mirror from his pouch, he placed it on the windowsill, so it would give him a clear view of the entrance to the inn opposite while he took his bath. Then he undressed and stepped into the first warm bath he'd had in far too many months. As he sank down into the steaming hot water, he thanked Aisha once again for allowing him these small luxuries, but knew before long that his work would recommence in the pursuit of the necromancer, hopefully leading him to the boy mage known as Lusam. Chapter 10 Lusam stirred to the noise of the curtains being drawn back. The light flooded into the room, and a headache, the likes of which he had never known in his life, erupted behind his closed eyelids. He groaned and tried to lift the blankets higher to shield his eyes, but the effort of moving his arms only intensified the pain in his head. The room was far too bright to open his eyes, but he did hear someone pass by the bottom of his bed and leave through the door before quietly closing it behind them. Slowly, his eyes adjusted to the bright light of the room, and he tentatively opened his eyes to see where he was. The last thing he remembered was trying to heal Lucy, but he couldn't remember if he had succeeded or not. In fact, he couldn't remember much of anything from that day. He tried to sit up in the bed, but again the slight effort of moving brought on the intense pain in his head once more. Bright spots danced across his vision, and a fresh wave of nausea threatened to overtake him. Lying back and panting through the pain, he managed to steady himself before attempting to open his eyes again. Deciding against trying to move again, he glanced around the room to take in his surroundings. Realization hit him like a bolt of lightning. He was in Lucy's bed. That must mean he'd failed in his attempt to save her. Lusam's heart sank at the thought of what Mr. Daffer must be going through right now. He doubted he could ever look him in the eyes again without feeling guilty for what he had done. He felt devastated beyond words and wondered if even Neela could ever forgive him. Unable to face the possibility of losing Neela, he closed his eyes and tried to shut out the cruel world outside. He could hear running footsteps coming from the hallway outside the bedroom door. Then the door flew open, banging loudly against the wardrobe standing just to the side of it. Lusam was sure Mr. Daffer had come to exact his revenge over losing his wife to his failed magic. He couldn't blame him either. He decided at that moment not to resist whatever he did to him. Not that he was in any shape to do so anyway.
"Lusam, you're awake!"
shouted a familiar voice. Lusam's head throbbed with every word, but hearing that voice was worth any amount of pain.
"Neela," he croaked back.
Even his voice wouldn't obey his commands. He sounded like he had eaten a bucket full of sand. Before he could even fully open his eyes, Neela held him tight in her embrace and was kissing him all over his very tender head. He opened his eyes to find her face very close to his own, with tears rolling down her cheeks.
"I'm sorry, Neela. I tried. I really did. I'm so sorry," he croaked.
Neela smiled at him, shook her head slightly, then kissed him on his forehead, before standing up and moving away from his bedside. Standing there behind her was the best sight Lusam could ever have wished to see.
"Lucy, you're alive."
"Yes, thanks to you, I am," she replied.
Mr. Daffer suddenly appeared in the doorway behind her and came to stand by her side. He reached down to take hold of Lucy's hand and squeezed it tightly before turning back to Lusam.
"We can never thank you enough for what you have done for us, Lusam. If there is anything you ever need, and it's within our power to grant it, you need only ask."
"That's very kind of you, Mr. Daffer. But seeing Lucy well is reward enough. You've both done so much for us already. I'm just glad we were able to repay some of your kindness,"
Lusam replied. Then after a moment's hesitation, he added,
"Although, if it's not too much trouble, maybe some food and a drink would be great. I'm starving."
"Oh, now I know he's going to be fine," Neela said, rolling her eyes at him. Lusam just smiled at her, while the rest of them laughed at Neela's comments. After eating what tastes like the best food of his life and drinking enough water to fill half a bathtub, he found himself with enough energy to get out of bed and search out his clothes. His head still hurt, but nothing like it had when he first awoke. He managed to get dressed and sit himself in the chair next to the window. The window overlooked the alley behind the shop, and it immediately reminded Lusam of the alley behind the baker's shop where he'd spent so many days and nights. How different his life was now. How much easier it would be from now on. How much happier he would be now he had Neela. He knew he loved her, and he knew she loved him. Surely their future together would be great. His daydreaming was interrupted by a knock at the door, followed by the click of the door opening. Neela's smiling face appeared from behind the door.
"Oh, good, you're awake," she said,
as she entered the room and closed the door gently behind her. She walked over to where Lusam was sat looking out of the window and stood behind him with her hands on his shoulders. Bending down, she kissed the top of his head before whispering in his ear,
"I thought I'd lost you forever. Please don't ever do that to me again. I was so worried about you."
"How long was I unconscious?"
he asked, reaching up to hold one of her hands.
"Over 4 days."
4 days? Lusam screeched, spinning around to face her, and immediately wishing he hadn't, as his head swam in pain again from the sudden movement. Holding his head in both hands, he repeated his question much more sedately.
4 days? I was asleep for 4 days.
Almost 5, actually. I was so worried about you, Lusam. I would never have forgiven myself if you hadn't come back to me. It was my fault I forced you into trying to heal Lucy. It could have cost you your life. I'm so sorry."
"It didn't, and you were right to make me try. Lucy is healthy again, and apart from this insane headache, I'm fine too. In a day or two, I'm sure I'll be back to full strength again. Then we can finish the last of the books and celebrate a job well done,"
he said, smiling at her.
"Don't worry about the books. I've already finished cataloguing them while you were unconscious. I was at my wit's end with worry, and I had to keep my mind occupied, or I would have gone insane."
"Wow, really? I'm so proud of you, Neela. Well done,"
he said, beaming with pride.
"It was easy. I had a great teacher,"
she replied, grinning from ear to ear. Lusam laughed at her compliment and teased her with,
"Yes, I guess you did."
Rolling her eyes at his statement, but not biting at the bait, she asked,
"If you feel well enough by the day after tomorrow, there's a carnival in town. Maybe you could take me there to celebrate our success."
"That sounds like a great idea. I'm sure I'll be fine by then. I feel almost back to full strength already,"
he said, standing up to give her a passionate kiss. After a few moments, she freed herself from his kiss, pushed him away slightly, then replied, grinning,
"Yes, I can tell you're feeling better."
Then Neela turned and headed for the door. When she reached the door, she opened it, then turned back towards Lusam.
"Save your strength. You never know. You might need it later,
she said, winking at him as the door closed behind her.
Now I know for certain I won't get any more sleep today, Lusam thought to himself.
Lusam was lying on his bed when a quiet knock at his door startled him. Come in, he said, loud enough for whoever was outside the door to hear. The door opened, and a woman peered around the door into his room. He recognized her as the maid who had been attending Lucy when he first came to this room.
Lillian, isn't it? Lusam asked.
Yes, sir, that's correct. Sorry to intrude, but I'm here to inform you that the evening meal will be served shortly. If you feel well enough, you're welcome to join the others in the dining room in around 15 minutes.
Thank you, Lillian. I'll be down shortly.
Very good, sir,
Lillian replied, but hesitated in leaving the room. Instead, she stood there silently, looking a little apprehensive.
May I help you with something else, Lillian?
I would like to thank you for whatever you did to help Mrs. Daffer. I have no idea how you did what you did, but thank you.
Not knowing just how much she did know, Lusam simply smiled and replied,
You're welcome. I'm glad I could help.
Lillian nodded, smiled back, and left the room. 10 minutes later, Lusam entered the dining room to find Mr. Daffer, Lucy, and Neela already seated at the table.
Ah, glad you felt up to joining us, Lusam. Please, take a seat. Dinner will be served shortly,
Mr. Daffer announced.
Thank you,
Lusam replied, taking a seat next to Neela.
How are you feeling, Lucy?
I feel almost as good as new, thanks to you, Lusam. How about you? You still look a little tired to me.
Oh, I'm fine now, thanks, Lucy. Nothing a good night's sleep won't fix, I'm sure.
Well, you are both welcome to stay here as long as you like with us. Please don't think you have to leave now that your work is finished. We owe you a debt that could never be repaid, so as far as we are concerned, you're as good as family from now on,
said Mr. Daffer. Lusam didn't really know how to react to what Mr. Daffer had just said, so he looked to Neela, who obviously had been told the same news already, because she didn't look half as shocked as she should have been.
Wow. Thanks, Mr. and Mrs. Daffer. I don't know what to say, except thank you.
You're more than welcome, Lusam,
Lucy replied, obviously amused by the surprise showing on his face. Just as Lusam was desperately trying to think of something to say to fill the awkward silence, Lillian emerged through the double doors with the first dishes of the evening meal.
Ah, wonderful. Dinner has arrived,
announced Mr. Daffer, breaking the silence.
Is everything all right, Lusam?
Asked Lucy, looking a little concerned at how quiet he had become since he'd been given the news.
Yes, yes, of course. Why shouldn't it be?
Replied Lusam, squirming a little in his seat as he said it.
It's just you seem a little preoccupied ever since we told you that you were both welcome to stay here as long as you like with us. I thought you might be happy here,
Lucy said, catching him completely off guard.
Oh, no. I mean, yes. Yes, of course we'd be happy here with you both. Your offer is a very kind one. Neela and me, kind of had plans for after we finished here, but we haven't had time to talk since before, you know, before what just happened,
Lusam stammered, his face flushing to a bright red.
Oh, is that all it is?
Asked Lucy, looking relieved.
I thought we had done something to offend you in some way.
No, no, not at all, Lusam quickly replied. You've both been incredibly kind to us. The last thing I want to do is insult either of you by refusing your generous offer, especially after all you have done for us.
He was about to continue when Lucy laughed and said,
Oh, I'm sorry, Lusam. I think you may have misunderstood our intentions. Of course you'll have plans for your future together. You're both very young still. You should know the offer remains open for you both, no matter what you decide to do now. If you decide to go off together and explore the world now, but need somewhere to stay in the future, our home will always be open to you both. What we're really trying to say is, if you ever need help, now or in the future, and it's within our power to help, we would always do so willingly. You need only ask.
Lusam sat at the table, trying to absorb the information that Lucy had just given him.
He now had a home to return to, and for the first time in a long time, he also had a place he could call home.
He was lost deep in thought when Neela took hold of his hand and gave it a small squeeze, bringing him back to the present.
I don't really know how to thank you both for your kindness,
Lusam replied, slightly choked up and with tears of joy starting to form in his eyes.
Nonsense! We have thanks enough already,
I had my Lucy back when I thought I had lost her forever. So, I propose a toast to the future and whatever it brings,
said Mr. Daffer, raising his glass. They all lifted their glasses and repeated the toast. To the future and whatever it brings. It was the day of the carnival, and both Neela and Lusam were looking forward to spending some time together, as well as spending some of their hard-earned cash. Lusam had never been to a carnival before. Once a year, the carnival would come to Helvil, but the street kids were forbidden to enter the town square while it was running. Any street kid caught within the town square while the carnival was taking place would be treated as a thief and dealt with accordingly. Once the carnival had packed up and left the town square, it became rich pickings for the street kids. So much wasted food and other items lay discarded all around the square, the guards turned a blind eye to the street kids taking their fill. Lusam knew the more the kids cleaned away, the less the local officials would need to arrange to be removed later. Lusam never tried his luck with any of the items left behind by the carnival. The amount and relative quality of the plunder meant it was often fought over by the street kids. They would form gangs and alliances days before the carnival would even arrive. It was a dangerous time of year to be a lone street kid. Many found themselves targets of the gangs around that time. As fast as the gangs and alliances were formed, they would just as quickly disappear again, as soon as the carnival had left town and its remains were fully plundered. Lusam remembered his first year in Helvil, when he almost became a victim of one of these gangs, but he'd been fortunate enough to lose them in the back streets of Helvil. He remained mostly in his grate for the next few days until the carnival had left town and things returned to normality again. The following year, he had decided not to take any chances and instead spent the time in the forest outside Helvil. This year would be different. He was no longer a street kid of Helvil. He would have money in his pocket to spend and clean clothes on his back. No one could accuse him or Neela of being street kids any longer. They would be free citizens of Helvil and would have the freedom of the city at last. Mr. Daffer had paid them for their work cataloguing the books, and together with the gold coins Lusam had made from the river, they each now had a good sum of money. Lusam had never had more than a coin or two in his pocket in his whole life. He didn't really know how to deal with having such a large amount of money on his person at any one time. Neela had shown him how and where best to carry his coins for safety, using the special leather coin pouches they'd bought in Helvil. She'd also suggested that they leave most of their coins in one of the chests in the basement of the shop while they visited the carnival, and only take with them what they might need for that day. Mr. Daffer had offered them both rooms upstairs in the main house after Lusam had recovered, but both Lusam and Neela felt more relaxed in their old sleeping cells and had politely refused his offer. Lusam looked around his sleeping cell and knew he would really miss this place when they finally left. He was very happy knowing he could return here if he needed to or wanted to in the future for any reason.
"Hey, are you ignoring me?"
Neela asked.
No. Why?" Lusam replied, confused, standing up from his bed.
"I called your name 3 times. I thought you'd gone without me."
"Sorry, I was just thinking about things, that's all. Are you ready to go?"
"That's what I was trying to ask you. So I guess we're ready then."
"Great. How much money do you think we should take with us?"
Lusam asked, weighing his coin pouch in his hand.
"I doubt we'll need more than 1 gold between us, but make sure you take small value coins and distribute them in different pockets. I know the street kids are not permitted to be there, but there'll certainly be plenty of cut purses and pickpockets watching the crowds. You don't want to be pulling out large numbers of coins or high value coins in plain view,"
Neela said, in a mother to a child type voice.
"Okay, thanks. I'll do that," Lusam replied sheepishly.
"Good. Let's go then." "Oh, wait a minute. I'll be right back,"
Neela said, as she quickly vanished from Lusam's room and headed for her own sleeping cell. 1 minute later, she reappeared in Lusam's doorway, still buckling on her throwing knife belt.
"We're going to the carnival. What do you need those for? Unless you intend to entertain the crowd with a knife-throwing exhibition," he said, with a smug look on his face.
"Ha ha, very funny. You never know when you might need your weapons. It's always better to have them with you than find out later that you need them and not have them."
"I suppose so," agreed Lusam, less than convinced.
Clicking his fingers together in a flamboyant gesture, he extinguished the light that was glowing on the ceiling above his cell, plunging it into darkness as he left the room and headed for the stairs to the shop above. Neela just rolled her eyes and followed in his wake, muttering something about boys and show-offs to herself. Lusam just smiled to himself and pretended not to hear her. As they approached the carnival, they could hear the music playing in the distance and smell the deliciously tempting foods on offer at the numerous stalls around the town square. People filled the whole area, all buffeting each other for a better view of the latest act on stage at the far end of the square. Jugglers dressed in motley costumes dotted the crowd, some high up on stilts, others balancing on the shoulders of their partners. One was juggling with a set of flaming torches, while another used vicious-looking knives. Everywhere they looked, something was happening. There were signs depicting various acts and attractions. Each sign had both a picture representing the activity and the words above it for the few people who could read. "What should we see first?" Lusam asked, still overawed by the sheer scale of the event.
"I'm not sure. Maybe we should just work our way around and see what we find as we go,"
Neela suggested.
"Sounds like a good enough plan to me," Lusam agreed, taking hold of Neela's hand as they started making their way towards the first tent.
Outside, there was a large picture board depicting a knife and a lady wearing a tunic and leggings. Above the picture were the words, "The Great Ormando."
"I wonder what this is?" Lusam asked.
A skinny man wearing a black suit overheard his question and answered before Neela even had the chance.
"Only one silver coin each to witness something so spectacular you'll be telling your grandchildren about it years from now. Roll up, roll up. The show is about to start. Don't miss this opportunity to witness the amazing skill of the Great Ormando."
"What do you think? Should we go see?"
"Come on, let's go see this amazing Great Ormando," Lusam said excitedly, all the time tugging on Neela's hand.
"Okay, okay. Let's go see what all the fuss is about,"
Neela agreed. Lusam placed two silver coins in the palm of the skinny man's hand and then headed directly for the door to the large tent, with Neela following close behind him. When they entered the tent, they saw several rows of chairs, most of which were empty, and a large stage at the front. Lusam headed directly for a seat on the front row, and Neela followed his example. They sat down, still holding hands, while Lusam looked around the large tent with a child's curiosity. Neela smiled at his reaction to a simple tent containing nothing more than a few props of a carnival attraction. It was then she actually realized just how restricted Lusam's childhood and adolescent years must have been. Although she'd not had a family in the usual sense of the word, she had grown up with a lot of freedom. She had seen many carnivals over the years, even working as a thief at some. To her, this was normal. To Lusam, it was something special. She loved his innocence, and she loved him beyond words. She released his hand and turned his face towards her. Looking into his innocent eyes, she whispered,
"I love you, Lusam."
Lusam flushed a little at her unexpected declaration, but returned the words without delay.
"I love you too, Neela."
Then he kissed her tenderly on her lips, before they both enveloped each other in a much more passionate kiss. Lost deep in the effects of young love, they didn't notice the props being brought onto the stage in front of them, ready for the main attraction. A few minutes later, their over-exuberant kissing was interrupted by the same skinny man from outside, announcing the show was about to start and that everyone should now take their seats. Glancing behind him, Lusam was shocked to see an almost full tent of people now seated behind them, more than a few looking in his direction with a look of disgust on their faces, obviously due to his and Neela's prior activities. Turning around to face the front, he sank a little lower in his chair, before reclaiming Neela's hand and settling in for the start of the show.
"Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome on stage the amazing, the magnificent, the stupendous, the Great Ormando!"
The crowd roared and clapped as a man dressed in a frilly white shirt and black trousers walked onto the stage. He was closely followed by a young woman dressed in a tight-fitting tunic and leggings. The young woman was escorted to the far end of the stage, where she was attached to a large wooden board by her wrists and ankles. Then the Great Ormando returned to the other end of the stage before removing a knife and demonstrating how sharp it was on a piece of paper. Lusam realized what was about to happen just as the man let loose with his first throwing knife. It thudded into the board, just missing the young woman and gaining him huge applause from the crowd. Neela just laughed loudly, and the man on stage actually turned to look at her as it interrupted his next throw. Feeling so silly for making Neela come and watch something like this, he turned to Neela and said,
"Sorry, I didn't know it would be... It's fine, don't worry. Let's watch this great Ormando. Maybe he can teach me something,
Neela replied, still giggling at Lusan's expense.
Would the young lady in the front row care to share with the rest of us what she finds so amusing? Or maybe she thinks the unmatched skill of the great Ormando is something to laugh at? If you wish to steal the attention of the great Ormando, maybe you should be the one up here on stage, young lady,
came the sneering voice from the stage. Lusam saw the immediate reaction in Neela's face to his challenge and cringed at the potential outcome.
Neela, don't,
was all he managed to say, before she vaulted onto the stage, taking the audience and even the great Ormando by surprise. The hushed whispers coming from the audience behind Lusam were getting louder as each person gave their prediction of what would happen next. He doubted any of them had as good an idea as he did as to what might happen next. The great Ormando looked visibly shaken that Neela had responded by leaping onto the stage the way she had. He'd obviously expected a different reaction from her. Neela walked calmly over to him. She removed a knife from her belt, placed the tip of it on his chest, and walked him at least 10 paces further back than where he'd thrown his earlier knife. Then she turned back towards the woman, who was now struggling frantically, without success, to free herself from her bonds. Neela removed her remaining 5 throwing knives, and threw one after the other, so fast that it seemed like all 6 were in flight at the same time. The young woman screamed, and the audience's reactions ranged from gasps to words Lusam had never even heard before. 6 loud thuds confirmed all the daggers' flights had ended. Each of the 6 daggers were perfectly arranged to create a halo effect above the young woman's head. The crowd was stunned into immediate silence as each of them tried to decide if this was in fact actually part of the show. Neela casually walked over to the young woman and retrieved her knives before whispering something to her. Jumping off the stage, she walked over to Lusam and offered him her hand, which he took as he stood up. Then they left a completely silent tent behind them and exited out into the hustle and bustle of the carnival outside. Neither Lusam or Neela noticed the 2 men exit the tent behind them. Lusam waited until he thought Neela had calmed down enough. He was about to apologize for taking her to see something that she obviously would never have enjoyed when she said,
"Sorry, Lusam, I didn't mean to spoil the show for you. It just really annoyed me."
"Oh, don't apologize. It was my fault for taking you to a show like that. I'm the one who should be saying sorry, not you. Besides, now he has to change his name."
Neela looked rather confused and asked,
"What do you mean, change his name?"
"Well, he can hardly claim to be the great Ormando unmatched in skill any longer, can he?"
Lusam replied, trying very hard to keep a straight face.
"No, I guess he can't,"
agreed Neela, laughing at Lusam's joke.
"Come on, let's go get something to eat, then we can find a show to watch that we can both enjoy,"
Neela suggested.
"Okay, but only if you promise me not to throw any more of your knives at the people on stage," teased Lusam.
"That depends on how bad the show is,"
Neela replied, grinning back at him. Both laughing, they headed off to buy something to eat. They eventually bought some sweet pastries and other items to eat from one of the food vendors, and then made their way towards the main stage area. The man who sold them the food had informed them that the main attraction would be starting on stage in the next few minutes. He'd suggested they should try and get a good vantage point to see the show, as it was a truly excellent spectacle. Having heard similar claims from the skinny man outside the knife-throwing tent, Lusam was a little skeptical about how good it would actually be. He decided to ask the man what kind of show it was this time, and was amazed to hear it would be a magic show. Apart from his grandmother, Lusam had never seen anyone else do any kind of magic before. He was very interested to see what this man or woman would do on stage. He was also very surprised that anyone would openly display their ability to use magic in public, even advertising the fact. Maybe his grandmother had been wrong after all. Maybe letting others know he could use magic wouldn't be as bad as she had thought it would be. After all, how dangerous could it be if this person was about to perform magic on a stage in front of all these people? They both tried to make their way towards the front of the crowd, but there were just too many people in front of them, all waiting for the main attraction to start. They decided to stay where they were, which left around 20 rows of people in front of them. The view from here was not ideal, but it was a lot better than where they had started, which was at least twice as far back. It seemed like a long time later, when a strange-looking man, wearing a black cloak covered in white stars and half-moons, walked onto the stage. The audience applauded loudly as he came to the center of the stage and bowed deeply to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you are about to witness is magic in its purest form. No trickery or sleight of hand, only magic. Please, enjoy the show,
the man announced, before taking another bow to the audience. The audience applauded loudly again. Even Lusan became excited at the prospect of seeing another person perform magic and clapped his hands enthusiastically. Lusan instinctively slipped into his mage sight to take a look at how bright this man's aura might be. But he was stunned to see that his aura was no brighter than most other people's in the audience. He knew this man could not possibly perform any kind of magic. In fact, he would be very surprised if he was capable of even sensing magic in others. Lusan was about to tell Neela that he was a fraud when something else caught his attention. Right at the front of the crowd, next to the stage, was the unmistakable crimson aura of the man they'd seen several months earlier in the West District, the one who had been inspecting the bodies they'd left there. A shiver ran through Lusan when he remembered the feeling this man had caused as he probed his mind that day. Lusan leant close to Neela and whispered, "Look, down near the front on the right. It's that man in the black robes we saw in the West District a few months ago." Neela scanned the front of the stage and nodded her agreement.
"Creepy-looking guy. Maybe he's part of the carnival."
"No, I don't think so. I never got round to telling you everything I sensed that night. Now is not the time either, but trust me, he's more than he seems,"
Lusan whispered in her ear.
"One other thing. That guy on stage is a fraud too. He has no real magic."
Neela was about to ask him if he was certain, then decided of course he was the best one to determine whether this man was a fraud or not, and instead said,
"Oh well, at least we didn't pay for this one."
Lusan laughed in agreement with her, and they both settled in to watch the show. Neela seemed quite impressed with the various magic tricks the man performed on stage, and Lusan was sure that he would have been too, except he couldn't help himself and kept using his mage sight to see how the man was cheating. He had to admit, some tricks were very cleverly done, but he couldn't help feeling the man was cheating the whole audience. When the show ended, the audience roared their approval, and several young men and women circulated throughout the crowds collecting donations for the show. Lusan was lost deep in thought when he was abruptly brought back to reality by Neela jabbing him in the ribs. She leant towards him as if she was about to kiss his cheek and whispered in his ear,
"Don't look now. But that strange man at the front just made eye contact with me, and he's now trying to make his way towards us. I think we should leave, right now."
"Are you sure?"
Lusan asked, desperately not wanting to look in the direction of the man.
"Yes, I'm sure. But if you want to wait here to make certain and debate it..."
"No, let's go, now,"
Lusan replied shakily. He had no idea why this man made him feel the way he did. Suddenly, he felt that strange feeling again, as if someone was trying to get inside his head. This time, Lusan easily kept the probing of the man at bay, even though he could feel the man's strenuous efforts to try and break down his barriers. Lusan felt much less threatened by the man's power this time, but he still didn't want to wait around to meet him face to face. They made their way through the main crowd towards the back of the town square, but it was slow progress. Once they had left the main mass of people behind and entered the general flow of people coming and going to the carnival, Neela chanced a quick glance behind her to see if the man was still in pursuit, and was not surprised to see that he still was.
"Quickly, follow me into that shop over there,"
Neela said, indicating a shop with its door wide open. As they entered, Lusan saw it was a shop selling cloth of all colors and designs, racks and racks of cloth that formed narrow walkways between them, almost like a multicolored maze. Neela grabbed Lusan's hand and pulled him along behind her. She seemed to know exactly where she was going, so Lusan just followed the best he could. A few seconds later, they found themselves exiting the shop through a back entrance and onto the street behind. Neela then led him down the cobbled street and into yet another shop, this time selling flowers and cakes. Again, she led him back outside through a rear door into yet another street. They repeated this another 3 times, each time entering by one door and leaving by another. Lusan had no idea where they were when they finally stopped running, and Neela pulled him inside yet another shop.
"I think we might have lost him,"
Neela said, glancing out of the shop window from behind a clothes rack. Lusan was still panting for breath, but managed to ask,
"How did you know which of those shops had rear doors like that?"
"It's what I do,"
was all she said in reply, still watching diligently for any sign of the man in black robes. They stayed in the shop for several minutes before deciding it was time to leave and head back to the safety of the old inkwell. Leaving the shop and gaining their bearings, they set